Okay, so as I said, many times in Nigeria, we talk about, we usually talk about what has not worked or what doesn't work
That's
in
true, yeah.
academic research. And I think for me, one of the great lessons I've learned in the last couple of years is the fact that collaboration is very important. It's key. And as much as collaboration is key, taking ownership is also very important.
That's a good
I've
value.
worked on the field where many times funding for most of the interventions we go to administer on the field is, provided 100% by a donor. And the state government has not brought counterpart funding. And in my mind, I'm like, why are we not prioritizing what is important? Why are we prioritizing what is less important? Do you understand?
I
I've
get
gotten
it.
to that point many times and I'm like, okay, let's just continue to move on and see whether there will be a change. But it's what we will continue to preach as researchers, taking ownership, collaboration between academia and industry. For
That's
me in Nigeria,
the
there's a big disconnect between the
line.
academia and industry. When you look at the developed climate, you see investors, private sector entities, industries going to academia to say that I found the problem and I want you to solve it for me.
Thank
And
you.
I'm backing you up with funding to do XYZ research. But when you look at the climb in Nigeria, we struggle a lot because we've not gotten to the point where the disconnection between the academia and industry, that gap has not been fully bridged. So academia is there doing their thing, the industry is there doing their thing. And you find that sometimes even in industry, they want to conduct research. Sometimes they still come to academia and they would pay them as consultants to conduct the research. And for me, I ask myself a lot of questions. I'm like, the graduates that we, I mean, we and I mean the recent graduates that we have in Nigeria, a lot of them have not gotten to the point where they understand business for what it is in the industry, in the labor market, or to say that they really understand what happens after you leave the four walls of a university, completing a 4-year degree program or a 5-year degree program, as the case may be. So going into the, I mean, going through all the stages that I've went through, from my first degree in biochemistry to a master of medical science in human nutrition, specializing in public health nutrition, and then moving on to manage projects for donor organizations and international NGOs who back you up with the kind of funding that you need to conduct research and do the kind of work that you need to. I'm like, there is a big gap. There is a major difference. That's what I have found. And you see, it's very interesting when you're getting funding, you're able to do research and you're getting the kind of outcomes that you're looking for, compared to when you are frustrated. You don't have the kind of backing that you need in terms of funding, in terms of the intellectual, capabilities required to ensure that you get a research done. It can really be hostile. It can be frustrating, So those are some of the things that I've come to really understand over time. And for me, again, in terms of taking ownership, having worked in government, I really now understand that when you're conducting research, there are a lot of biases, there are a lot of vested interests when
That's
you're
true.
conducting research. And those are some of the things that I feel that some upcoming researchers or young researchers have not really started. They've not gotten to the point where they start understanding these things. When you do research, there is the political side of it, there is the environmental side of it. There are a lot of risks that come with conducting research. Now we're talking about fulfilling the sustain, achieving the sustainable development goals. We're talking a lot about environmental sustainability. We're talking about climate action. We're talking about a lot of things that has to do with the research that we conduct in our different universities, our bench work, our field activities, and a lot of other things. So there are a lot of biases that comes with conducting a research, that before you even decide to choose a topic or before you decide to delve into any kind of research, these are some of the things you have to sit back as a researcher, go to your drawing table, and do a thorough mapping of all the things that are involved with conducting your type of research. So some of the research that I've conducted lately has a lot to do with, influencing change. So social behavioral change communication in healthcare sector, I've also moved from that into influencing change in, I mean, policy reforms using research. So, for example, the one that I mean, been working on, which I'm still working on, so looking at the food safety environment in Nigeria. So the Federal Ministry of Health, according to statistics from them, say that we lose 200,000 Nigerian citizens to food poisoning and other food safety related illnesses every year. So in my mind, that is already a problem as a researcher. So how do you go about reducing the number or bringing the numbers down? And we now discover that when you look at the landscape in Nigeria, we don't even have a working food safety legislation.
That's interesting.
That guards the informal market, your bucaterias, your restaurants, and all of that. So and for you to make that work, you now have to conduct research in a way that you speak the language of the people that will influence the change. And I think that is a lot. Sometimes I pick some academic papers. I'm a storyteller. I think I did not talk about that at the beginning. I love when I read a piece that it's as simplified as possible. I know that in academic research, we use a lot of highfalutin, big grammar, and you know that is academic research. But you want to explain your academic research to a layman that walks on the street, to an average, ordinary citizen as an academic researcher. How do you simplify that information for them to understand it and be able to make use of it? Do you understand? Those are some of the areas that I feel that academic researchers need to start looking into. Yes, so from some of the work that I've done, after we conduct the research, we come up with opinion pieces, we come up with policy we come up with policy document, we come up with policy papers that you give to a policy maker who is in the National Assembly, in a parliament, for example, is going to influence change because you are there as an academician, you're speaking your language, they don't understand what you're saying. You have to write it in a language that they understand for them to be able to influence the kind of change that you're looking for in that environment. So, and that's why I said that at the beginning, for an academic researcher, you have to be able to come down to terms with a lot of biases that, you know, that builds into a research process. You have to look at the political side of things. You have to look at the environmental side of things. You have to look at the health and safety side of things. You have to look at it holistically in a way that you're able to create a thorough mapping of how you want to engage in a research from start to finish to ensure that you get the kind of outcomes that you're looking for. Those are some of the things that I've now, I mean, been able to integrate into the way that I do research in the last couple of years. And for every young researcher that comes near me, I keep, you know, I try in my own little way to ensure there is capacity building, that there is transference, I mean, there's transfer of knowledge, and that there is transfer of skills. One of the issues that we also have in conducting academic research is lack of continuity. Mr. A has done a research. I should be able to take on that person's research and continue from where the person has stopped. So I was saying that really what academic research should do for us is that we should be able to influence a society. We should be able to create change. We should be able to create change with the research that we conduct. We should not conduct research and after I'm done defending my thesis and all of that, bind up the research work and just go archive it on the shelf. That is not what academic research should be all about. Academic research should be done in the first place because there is a problem to be solved.
I think that's the main thing.
We should not just do research because we want to do research. That is what I've come to understand in the last couple of years, that you have to do research knowing that you are trying to provide solution to a burning issue or to a problem that is at the front burner of whether an economic sector or any line of industry, you understand?
Yeah.
Whether in mining and manufacturing, whether in healthcare, whether in the finance sector, whether what. So let me cite an example of a research that was conducted within my organization at some point. So we're looking at the reason why Nigerian taxpayers were not paying tax.
Okay, that's a good one.
And we went on to conduct research. So bringing subject matter experts into the room, and they went on to conduct research, looking at household surveys, even going as far as looking at small, medium enterprises, medium enterprises and large scale businesses, corporates, to say that why is it that people are not paying tax in Nigeria? And when we interviewed an average woman in a market, she said, for her, she doesn't see any reason why she should pay tax because she doesn't see what the government is doing with the tax. So she would rather not pay tax. You ask somebody who should also pay personal income tax, they come up with the same thing. When you go to other countries, you see what the government is doing with the tax. You can see good roads. You can see basic basic amenities like access to healthcare services, like access to water, access to electricity, and all of that. But to keep paying taxes, we are not seeing anything. And that's the reason why one of the highlights was that we don't even trust governments. but this now guided the outcome of this research, guided the type of, papers that should come out from the research. So at the end of the day, white papers were created, pieces were created from the outcome of the research. We had abridged versions of the reports that came out from the research, and we had the full report document that eventually was disseminated far and wide. It was disseminated to all the 36 state governors. It was disseminated to all the commissioners of finance of every state. It was disseminated to people in the National Assembly, all the policymakers. That this is what your citizens are saying about why we are not paying tax. Can we do something about it? And that brought about the Finance Act that was enacted into law January 2020. See how a problem was resolved by conducting a research, and change was brought about by engaging the key decision makers, who are your policy makers, your private sector, industry players, the academia, and all the people that are involved within the finance or the fiscal policy landscape to create the kind of change that we're looking for, to say that this is what people are saying. This is what the small businesses are saying. This is what households are saying. This is what everyone is saying. Can we start creating the change? What legislations need to be in place? What reforms do we need to put in place to ensure that people see value for the tax that they pay to the government? And these are the type of research that I've been engaged in within healthcare, within finance, within the finance sector, and within agriculture, food and nutrition landscape. So, and I remembered a research that was funded by the UK government. That was in 2017. I was a senior researcher on the project, recruited the researchers that went onto the field to take data, to collect data from people. So it was a pilot study. So we're looking at reducing the waiting times of patients, to see doctors in secondary and tertiary health institutions in Nigeria. And you'll be shocked at some of the things we found, depending on the geopolitical zone in Nigeria. So you would think that if you went to the Southwest and you conducted the study using the protocol instrument that we designed to collect data, quantitative instrument for collecting the kind of data we wanted from patients in the hospital, from even the chief medical directors, the nurses, the records manager, that's a medical records manager in all the hospitals and all of that. So we conducted research using key informant interviews, focus group discussions with all these entities, the patients and all the managers within an hospital setting, for example. What we found as outcomes in the northern region was different from what we found in the southern region. It was completely different from what we found in the eastern region. But one key thing that we were able to draw down on was the fact that most hospitals needed to migrate from the manual records keeping system to digitization. You understand? Yeah. And that, because that was one of the reasons why most patients spent more time in the hospital. They spent almost the average time that was found from the research was 8 hours. So an average patient in Nigeria spends 8 hours in the hospital before they are able to see a doctor, except it's in an emergency situation. So we took that report at the end of the day, and we went to because it was a collaboration between the Bureau of Public Service Reforms, because we're talking about healthcare service delivery in Nigeria. How are we delivering healthcare in Nigeria? So at the time, it was Dr. Joe Habba that was the Director General of the Bureau of Public Service Reform. So it was in collaboration with the UK government and BPSR and the Ibadan School of Government and Ibadan School of Government and Public Policy. So these three bodies collaborated, got the funding from the UK government, and hired us, senior researchers, younger researchers, to come together to conduct the study. And we went and disseminated the findings of the research with the Minister of Health at the time, which was Professor Isaac Adewale. And what we noticed was, after disseminating the findings from the study, some of the hospitals where we conducted the pilot study, we started seeing some changes. Like one of the general hospitals in Abuja, for example, that was strictly operating the manual records keeping system, went to full digitization.
Wow, that's good. That's awesome. Well done.
You understand? Yeah. So these are some of the
Wow.
highlights of research that I've conducted in recent years. Because for me, I'm like, I don't just want to do research because I want to do research. I
That's
want to
the
see,
thing,
I want to conduct research and see the impact that it has on people, that it has within the society, and to be able to bridge the gap. You understand? So those are some of the things that pushes me and drives me to continue to, and I love using social behavioral change communication to talk about healthy eating. I mean, talking about nutrition to people, advice, I counsel not only patients, even family counseling. I create menu plan for families. I do a lot of things, and in the process, it's still conducting research because you're meeting people, you're discussing with them, you're collecting data from them, you're analyzing it, you're turning it into
So
information that at the end of the day, when you disseminate, it should create the kind of positive change that we are looking for in the diverse sectors where we work.
Wow, that's awesome. Thank you very much. And just listening to you for me as well was just listening to everything that you spoke about, especially how you're able to meet needs. You see what the needs are, and then you go ahead and work and meet those needs and make those changes. So to me, that's just the perfect icing on the cake. So I am just well done. I mean, you've done so much work and you're still doing
You.
enormous work. And it is a privilege to even hear some of the things that you're doing, and it's encouraging to see some of this work. So thank you so much for everything that you've shared with us. You've talked about what we need to think about. And I think when you spoke about making sure that we do research that meet needs rather than just sitting in our little offices and doing things on our own, making sure that industry and research and academia are talking to each other rather than one doing their thing and the other doing their own thing. So
Yeah,
again, you've
definitely.
really shared some really important point that we need to start thinking about as a
Yeah.
nation, Africa, Nigeria as well. So
Yeah.
thank you so much. Before we
Thank
leave
you.
though, I want you to maybe share, what advice would you give to someone, say they're an upcoming researcher just generally in Nigeria? What would you tell them?
Okay, so number one, first thing for me would be to find a mentor. So find a mentor in your area of expertise where you would love to do research, because there is no man knows it all. There is
That's
no
true.
island of knowledge. I've been able to stand on the shoulders of a lot of people that have gone ahead of me, that have trained me, that have really drilled me. I've really grinded a lot of times.
That's good.
Sweat and tears and all of that. But having the right set of people to mentor you as a young researcher is key. I remembered even from biochemistry department in Federal University of Technology, MENA, where I did my first degree in biochemistry, I had a lot of lecturers who were interested in me, not just only in my well-being. They were interested in me understanding what I was learning and to be able to convert that into a tangible result, not just coming to class. Although at some point I felt like I was just coming to class, we're just churning out notes. I was just, people, the lecturers would just come, they would just dictate notes, you just keep writing notes, writing notes. But at the end of the day, what I did as a young researcher, I never allowed a class to just end. If I had anything in mind that I was curious about, I walked straight into a lecturer's office. I would knock and I would ask questions. And I was lucky to have the kind of lecturers who were willing to offer help, who were willing to share their expertise with me, who were also ready to take me on their journey.
Yeah.
You understand?
That's
Those are some of the things that I feel that young researchers need. And we have a lot of people like that in the universities, in the workplace,
yes,
who are willing to transfer their skills, who are willing to transfer their knowledge, who are willing to build the capacity of young researchers for us to, you know, to be able to achieve the kind of results we want in Africa, in Nigeria, for us to be able to get the kind of outcomes that we're looking for as a nation. So the first thing, as I will reiterate, is that you need to find the right research mentor in your area of interest. So that mentorship for me is key, the major highlight for younger researchers. And secondly, one key highlight is the ability to ensure continuous professional development, building your skills, your capacity to be able to do the kind of research that you want to do. Because like I said, all the things that I've learned, I did not learn them at the university level. It was, you know, constant going all out on the internet, studying documents, reading journals, going to meet people, having conversations, you know, and I love speaking to people who have gone ahead, professors, associate professors. I really want to know what you did. Like, tell me what you did right. Tell me where you went wrong. What can I correct on my own journey? Because I believe that, experienced researchers have gone ahead of younger researchers so that we don't make the kind of mistakes that
they've
made.
That's true.
So that we can learn from their journey and be able to do things, better and be able to ensure global best practice in everything that we do. So for me, my advice to younger researchers is continue to build yourself, continue to build those skills, because at the end of the day, you wouldn't know where you would need it.
Know.
And it's never a waste, because at the end of the day, it's going to stand for you somewhere in the future.
That's
you're going to be needing it. You know, sometimes I look at myself, having come from a biomedical science background, and how far I have come now. I've built a lot of skills, and not just, when you talk about stakeholder management, you have to be able to manage high-level stakeholders.
Absolutely.
Talking about strategic communication in the way you do your work, talking about collaboration, talking about creativity, problem solving. You see a lot of people, they write it as skills, you know. Being a team player. Team player is very important. You see people working, they'll be saying, oh, they're hoarding information. They don't want to share things with people. Who are you auditing for? Audit and go to your grave with it.
Yes, now.
Do you understand? Audit. Hoard the information and go to your grave with it. So for me, mentorship, continuous professional development, continue to build those skills. And when you look at the global competencies that organizations look out for in this day and age, people look out for your ability to be able to manage projects. Because organizations now have turned research into projects. They are projects that you have to manage. And you have to be able to coordinate yourself. You have to be able to work in a team of, with a team of experts. And not have clashes because of your personal personality difference and all of that. Those are skills that you now have to build as a young researcher. Your ability to be able to perform, your ability to own your skill in terms of emotional intelligence. You have to be emotionally intelligent. Your emotional quotient must be high up there. And these are things that we didn't learn in the university.
No.
These were things that we built as skills along the line of work. So for younger researchers, I would say, there is no end to learning. You learn, you enter the grave. if you permit me to use that word,
exactly.
You continue to learn.
Yeah, right.
You continue to build the skills. You continue to understand the biases and the vested interest that comes with you conducting the research. You have to be able to understand how to continually map your way through a research as you go along, and be able to understand how you want to create change using research and different methodologies. So I think I'll just end it there so that, we can always have, other conversations and future chats to talk about how we've used research to influence, reforms, legislative reforms, policy reforms, and other, it's an abridged version I've shared today, like just put everything in a nutshell, but there is still a lot. And I believe that there is still a lot that we all can learn from people that have gone ahead of us so that we can have the kind of future that we are looking for. So because at the end of the day, the future, futurists, we're talking about the future of artificial intelligence, the future of, the future is talking about, using robotics and all of that to conduct research. So how do we get better? If this is what the future is saying, when we've not even been able to take ownership and own our space now. So I think I'll just end there. Thank you so much for having me on your
channel. Thank you. I do appreciate your time because I know it takes a lot of work to get this together and, trying to come on and spare your time. So thank you so much, Delacroix.
Really, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And hopefully I will be able to maybe get together again just to keep talking about some of these things. Thank you so much. And I'll speak to you again soon, hopefully.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
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 Okay.